Back to the Monday edition of Radio Entrepreneurs. I'm Jonathan Friedman, alongside Gary Furtig, our co-host for today in the Money Matters Radio Network.
Great to be here again, Jonathan. And Greg Stahl, one of our usual guests, is in today, and he's brought along a guest with him.
Thank you. I'm pleased to introduce Matt Morgan. This is one of my all-time favorite stories from my years in the classroom. I tend to try on a regular basis to write case studies on interesting stories. This particular case study was on this firm, Beko Ninter, that Matt currently works for. At the end of the case study discussion, the protagonist and his father were in the classroom, and Matt asked me after class, he said, "My family comes from the maritime business," which is what the background of the case study was on. "Do you mind if I talk to the entrepreneur and or his father? Just introduce myself." I said, "Sure." So things obviously went quite well. And 2 months later, Matt ended up getting a job offer from the company and has been working with them ever since. It's
That's
a
great.
Really interesting business story.
Great. So essentially, we have a real live case study in our midst here. Good to see. Welcome, Matt.
Welcome, Matt.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Tell us a little bit about your background and how it came to be, as Greg pointed out, that you're with, let me try and get this right, Beko Ninter.
That's close enough. It's a Spanish amalgamation of words, so it makes a lot of sense if you say Beko Ninter. And anyways, we started in 1988, the company did, but it took a long time for me to get to that point because first I had to go to Boston College to get my MBA, where I met our current executive director. And their company based out of Venezuela called Beko Ninter, which does a lot of tracking of containerized cargo. And what we do is we manage the billing and collection process of late fees for those containers and getting them returned to the shipping carriers. And we take our profit from the commission from those collections.
As you were telling us before we began the segment, the logistics associated, it's not as easy as saying, "Oh, those containers are over in the yard in Alston." Those containers could be anywhere in the world.
It's right. You know, with so many millions of containers out there, having some type of assistance in being able to track these and find the billable opportunities is really what makes our company successful, and it fills a big hole in the business.
So how do you know when the container's late? Are you getting, you know, a file from the shipping company saying, "I just received my container and it's 3 days late"? You know, is that essentially kind of what happened, making it simple?
Right. in some cases like that, but we're really a data company, and we have many different sources of the data. It might be the terminal, it might be the shipping line, it might be their agent. And if we pull in all of this data together, we can get a better picture of what's happening with this container, with the container number that it has. And then we simply look at the contracts for what they have with each customer who's shipping goods. And from there, we can see how much to bill, how many days they might have to keep the container after the shipment arrives. And we find those billable opportunities. And in a local market, we'll bill the customer and make the collection and remit those collections to the shipping carrier.
So does someone like Maersk, is their contract standard? Everybody gets the same terms, you know, so that this way you put those terms into your database before, you know, like day one when you sign that contract with Maersk? Or is each contract different and you've got to, you know, re-enter that data to make it right?
For a company like Maersk, with so many different offices in so many countries, it's very difficult to have a blanket large global contract for these type of business, because as Greg likes to talk about at Boston College, there are so many different markets, nuances, and business practices in different countries that the contracts really have to be localized. Mm-hmm. And they, for instance, in the Caribbean, they might say, "Well, you know, based on our regular business practices, we need to have 2 weeks after delivery of the container so that we can unpack it. We don't have the big warehouses like they might have in the United States." And so they need to have a little bit more time, for example, than maybe in the United States, where we are very efficient in importing goods, distributing goods, and warehousing. So it's different in most countries, and it's up to our company to be able to make sense of that.
So, Matt, you talked about early on that the company is a Venezuelan-based company.
That's
and,
right, yeah.
You joined the company, and it was doing business in Venezuela and the United States only?
Our business in the United States is very low. In fact, we make money on inefficiency. And in a market that's very efficient, the absolute number might be large in the United States, but on a container-by-container basis, in Venezuela, This is called demurrage and detention billing.
Right.
A regular demurrage bill might be in the 800s of dollars per container, whether it accrues this fee or not, which is a very large number when you consider that to ship the goods in that container might only be a couple thousand.
Right.
So in the United States, that number might be as low as $15 per container. So if we're dealing with a smaller amount of containers in a foreign country where on a container by container basis, the possible amount to bill is large, we want to be there. That's why we'll never leave Venezuela if we can help it, because it's one of the single largest markets for these fees because of inefficiencies and difficulty distributing or trucking these containers around the country.
So the growth of the company's experience over the last couple of years has been based on strategically looking at those countries with high fees, slow unpacking times.
Right. So probably more third world countries?
And you get a lot of, most of our growth has been organic, where the company, shipping companies come to us and say, listen, we're having trouble in Guatemala.
Right.
We can make no sense of where the container goes. It leaves the port, and maybe we don't see it for 6 months. You know, and we don't know where it's going. Maybe the local agent there doesn't have very good paperwork. And so they might really have no sense. It just goes into a black hole. And we hear this from a couple different customers. And we say, well, you know, let's go in and take a look at Guatemala. Let's take a look at the business climate there, see if we could do business there. Makes it very easy for us because we keep all of our back office in Venezuela and all of our servers and all of our IT equipment is based in Miami, a little bit safer there. And we go into this market to see about opening up an office. And we sign the contracts with our customers before we ever go. Mm-hmm. And based on our track record with them, we enter a market and then we'll begin.
So I'd imagine it's twofold for your customers. Not only is it the additional costs or penalties associated with holding onto the container, but it's the opportunity cost of losing that container for the time that it's sitting in the market.
Absolutely.
Unused.
The shipping carriers, they need to turn a container 7 or 8 times a year to make a profit.
Sure.
If that container is missing for 2 months, that container is going to be a profit-losing container.
Sure.
So the way we sell our services is we say we will reduce the turnaround time. And not only will we get you a lot more money in collections and send it your way because you're collecting maybe 50%, maybe 30% of what should be collected, but that container is coming back 2 weeks faster, which means that you can put it right back in the fleet and making money again, which is a big benefit to the company.
So you're based here in Boston. Yeah. What is your role with the company? Was the computers are down in Miami and in Venezuela? Yeah.
Well, I'm CIO. I started as an international project manager. So as CIO as well, I'm doing a lot of travel. So it really didn't matter where I was based.
Okay.
I could be based in India. And as long as I can reach the places that we're working,
sure,
that would be ideal. So I'm based up here because, family's up here and,
right,
and it makes sense to be up here. But our company really in terms of the IT is based out of Florida because it's the gateway to the Americas, really.
Sure.
You have internet service, you have energy, you have a lot of uptime there. Whereas in some of these foreign markets, especially in Latin America, you might be up 4 days a week. And so as long as we can keep our IT up and running and accessible by, our 13, 14 countries that we're in right now, then all the other operations, the international operations, can keep working. And even if Hugo Chavez comes in and takes over our company, we can still continue operating because we are, diversified.
Diversified, sure.
You talked about that earlier, so that was part of the strategy that you brought on board in terms of diversifying the marketplace and going out to different countries throughout Latin America and the Americas, South America as well, or globally around the world?
It's globally. We've had forays into Europe. We currently have an office in South Africa. We're opening an office in Angola right now, which there are just $100 million sitting out there to be collected and no real way to make sense of it. And our customers are begging us to go in there.
The pirates grab the containers down there too?
Well, it's one of those kind of black holes right now. They have incredible growth in Angola, but they don't really have the infrastructure there to support the growth today. And so that's why we're getting in there. But Latin America, it makes a lot of sense because of a common language. There might not be a common culture in South America or in Central America as well, but a common language makes it easier. We also have a large part of the company now that speaks Portuguese because we're in Brazil. Which has been an incredible growth country as well, and we wanted to get in on that.
So besides doing the billing figuring that out. Do you actually work on the collection piece of it too, or is that farmed out to another company?
No, that's us.
So
we're
doing the billing and the collection.
We're doing the billing and the collection, and it's great in a company like this how lean we can be. You know, after years of building this company and getting all your departments right and figuring out how to do it, we have an office in Trinidad today. We entered Trinidad when there was a competitor in Trinidad, and maybe they had, you know, 25, 35 people doing the business that we're doing. We entered Trinidad, and today we have maybe 40, 50% of the market, and we have two people there. And being able to be that lean in a foreign market, because we have our back office in Venezuela, we have additional collectors in Venezuela speaking Spanish, speaking English, Portuguese, where we might find in Barbados there's a lot of collections to be made. We can move some of the collectors that are collecting in Puerto Rico and Trinidad and have them focus on Barbados a little bit. And having that lean infrastructure really makes it a lot easier for us to move internationally.
So does the money come through you first, or is the are the checks actually going to the, you know, to the Maersk or your client?
That's actually the great part of our business model. The checks come to us.
Ah, so you have the float on that too.
We keep the float on that, and we remit once a month. And you know, the you know, 1 month remittance.
1 month remittance. That's a nice.
It can be very large. Today we're doing around $300 million U.S. in collections per year. And we keep our commission on that, but we also keep the float. And you know, there's only so much float that you can keep. You can't really, not like a bank where we can, you know, use those monies elsewhere. It's really their money, and they could request it at any time. But contractually, we have to get them back their money pretty quickly.
Okay.
They want it.
So, Matt, not only an interesting story in terms of the company, how it's evolved internationally, but you yourself working for a South American or, I guess, Venezuelan family. And that must come with a host of exciting times as well. Cultural differences, and in particular working with a family business, I imagine, bring its host of challenges. So.
It has, but it's been really a great experience, though. When I first took the job there, I moved down to Venezuela for about 7 months to get to know the business and everything. And now I'm moving around quite a bit, but I still have that link to the family and to the business in Venezuela. And the people in Venezuela are really really a pleasure to get to know. And you know, a lot of the countries in South America, Colombia included, they get really bad reps, but the bad rap is not warranted. Mm-hmm. They're incredible countries with amazing people, great food, and it's really a shame that politics shroud that type of country. And it's been a pleasure working for the company.
Say the same about our country.
Yeah.
Anyways, Matt, it was great to have you on. Can you tell our listeners, if they'd like to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
It'd be email as well. You can reach me at my company email, which would be mmorgan@veconinter.com. That's veconinter.com.
Great. Well, we hope that elections coming down in South America, things go well, and the company continues to prosper.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you having being on the show with us today. And thank you to Greg Stoller for bringing you in and introducing us as well.
Thank you both.
And we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.